And just press the scalar button there, Amy. It's the middle one. Oh, there's Jan. Well, that's exactly what I'm going to be talking about this morning. And probably I don't need to, because I think Janine's done such a wonderful job of talking about that. I just don't want you to think that I'm about to retire. I don't want you to think that, okay? We're just putting something in motion for in the event that that does happen, and it's got to happen to all of us at some point in time. So I just want you to know that I'm cool. I mean, I'm cool. I'm young and I'm hip and I'm cool, and so don't worry. I mean, maybe you're glad, I don't know, but I'm hoping you're a bit sad, and I'm saying don't worry. Right, let's open our Bibles, shall we, to Luke chapter 10. Although we've had it so well demonstrated to us, we don't really need to read it, but I like reading the Bible, so we're going to do it. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life? What is written in the law?" He replied, "How do you read it?" He answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." "You've answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this and live." But he wanted to justify himself. So he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" In reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he fell into the hands of robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him, bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine, and then put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out two denarii, gave them to the innkeeper. 'Look after him,' he said, 'and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have.' Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers?" The expert of the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him. Go and do likewise." I received a rather unhappy and distressed email the other day from an old friend of mine. She had immigrated to Canada about 30 years ago. She and her husband were concerned then already about the way things were going in South Africa, and she now lives in Toronto and is once again concerned about her children and now her grandchildren's future. It might have taken a while, but it seems that both violence and categorizing people by externals has caught up with her. It's now also happening in Canada. And then she looks at the whole world and she sees that in many parts of the world also this polarization of treating people differently because they are different, it's just rife throughout the world. And quite frankly, she looked at all this and was overwhelmed by it, particularly when it was happening in Canada as well. And so with that email and with the ongoing reality of our own situation in South Africa, with these thoughts in my mind, Janine then gave me texts to choose in order to talk today at our family service. And one of them was this one about neighbor. And I thought, well, that's a good one. We need to deal with this. And although we have dealt with it in the past, I felt it was worthwhile doing it again. And then as I looked at this text, I suddenly realized the brilliance of Jesus. Now, I don't want to sound patronizing. I mean, how can anybody patronize Jesus? Of course he's brilliant. But this is brilliant. What he's saying is not difficult to understand. And if we all did what Jesus is talking about, well, the things that concern my friend would in fact become a thing of the past. And so to look at this, I want us to go back to first century Palestine. And we read that on one occasion, Jesus was teaching his disciples. And in my mind, I can picture them sitting there, some of them sitting on stairs, some of them on a little wall, and they're interested people. I mean, they heard that the rabbi's teaching, and they were there, and they were just listening to what Jesus was saying. And as he's talking, an expert in the law stands up. Now, we might call him a seminary professor. He's one of these theological buffs. And he stands up, and we are told that he wanted to test Jesus. Now, his intentions in wanting to test Jesus may have been good. He may simply have wanted to make sure that this new rabbi on the block was orthodox. Nothing wrong with wanting to preserve the purity of the faith. And so he starts the conversation, and maybe because of his experience, he starts with a question that he's learned through his experience as a good introductory question, that if you ask this question and the way they answer this question will actually show a lot about what the people believes. So he starts with his standard introductory question, and he says, "Teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" But now this professor isn't prepared for Jesus. What Jesus does is answer the question with another question. "What is written in the law?" Jesus replied. "How do you read it?" And that's clever, because suddenly the professor finds himself in a dialogue. It's no longer a simple yes or no one word answer session. It's dialogue. And I know that I'm talking off topic now, but we need to learn from Jesus. Us folk who are older will find this strange. When we hear a question, we want to answer the question, especially if we've got a good answer for that question. We just want to answer the question. But what we need to learn is that younger folk especially want to be part of a conversation. They don't want to be told the answer. And as I say, we are older might find that a little bit more difficult. They want to be part of a conversation. They want to be in relationship. And so their question to us may well be a question that tests the possibility of relationship with us. And so if we simply throw out a well-rehearsed answer, well, what we're going to do is we're going to cut off dialogue. That's the end of that story. So we should aim to do what Jesus did. He made sure that he entered a dialogue with that professor. And I know I'm going even further off point now, but particularly for those of us who have teenage children, and maybe we've got teenage grandchildren, use the gift of a question that they ask us to enter dialogue. You know, we might just be so inclined to want to set them straight, you know, to give them the answer that we've been dying to give them, and we cut off dialogue. Use questions to enter dialogue like Jesus did. I won't charge you extra for that. We go back to Jesus and the professor. The professor has been around the block a few times. He knows his Bible, and he's able to bring several texts together. And so, in fact, he has an answer to Jesus' question. And he says, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." Jesus praises the professor's answer. "You've answered correctly." And then he just leaves the ball in the professor's court. But now the professor has a sense of discomfort. He came here to check Jesus' orthodoxy, but he's ended up needing to prove his own. And he tries to get the initiative back. So he asks a question, and we read, wanting to justify himself, he asks Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" Now that's interesting that he felt he needed to justify himself. Why might this professor have wanted to justify himself to Jesus? I don't know. Maybe he felt shortchanged. Maybe he'd come for a debate and the debate was over before it even began. Maybe he felt Jesus hadn't given him the opportunity to show to Jesus how brilliant he was. Maybe he felt foolish for having asked his introductory question, which might have worked with first-year seminary students, but it was actually quite a pathetic question when Jesus put it to Jesus, but he feels he needs to justify himself. And it's almost like he's saying, yes, Jesus, ha, 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 that's obvious. But now let's get serious, Jesus. Let's get serious. Let's get practical. And who is my neighbor? Who is my neighbor? Who is the one that I must love as I love myself? Define that for me, Jesus, the professor asks. And once again, Jesus doesn't throw out an answer. Instead, Jesus tells a story that is so easy to understand, but one, if we understand it, challenges us to the core of our being. Once upon a time, and he starts introducing the characters and the context. Once upon a time, a man, a Jewish man, he went from Jerusalem down to Jericho. Now that's a 30-kilometer journey from Jerusalem to Jericho, and the country is harsh. It's desolate country. There are few people around, even today, and with good reason. To go from Jerusalem to Jericho, you were likely to be attacked, as this Jewish man was. He was attacked, and he was left half dead. Now, there were some people who had no option but to travel that road, like priests. You see, a good number of priests actually lived in Jericho. And then when they did temple duty, they had to make the 30-kilometer trip up to Jerusalem. They did their week's temple duty, and then they had to make their way back down to Jericho. They had to take their chances. They had no option. As it happened, a priest was returning from Jericho doing temple duty, and we can update that maybe a pastor was walking past. A good guy, right? Not only a good guy, but one who'd spent a week present to God, ministering to God in temple duty. Sensitive to God, surely. Well, he sees a beaten up Jewish man and unbelievably just keeps on walking. Keeps on walking. But much to the victim's relief, another man comes along. Hope is reborn. This time it's a Levite. Another good guy, right? I mean, this is a religious man. He knew Torah. He knew about loving God. He knew about loving neighbor as oneself. We know the story. The Levite, too, just passes by. Surely our half-dead, beaten-up Jewish man will soon be a dead man. I mean, what are the chances of a third man coming down the road? And even if another one comes, if a priest and a Levite just walk past him, well, what help could anybody else be to him? But at this point in the story, Jesus introduces a third man. And the third man is a Samaritan. Now, what hope is there for the man lying half dead? I mean, there's bad blood between the Samaritans and the Jews. The only good Jew is a dead Jew. That's what the Samaritans would have thought. And certainly the Jews weren't even willing to walk through the country of Samaria because there was such bad blood between the Jews and the Samaritans. What hope can this man have with a Samaritan walking past? Well, turns out there's all the hope in the world. The Samaritan sees the man. He goes to him. He bandages him. He puts him on his own donkey. And he drops him off at the inn. Pays in advance for the man to be cared for and for his accommodation. Promises to make good any shortfall. That was unexpected. And the crowd listening to the story would have found that unexpected. After all, the man was a Samaritan. He did that for a Jew. I remember the question that Jesus has asked, has been asked. The question was this, and who is my neighbor? And who is my neighbor? Jesus could simply have given a definition. Probably the professor hoped for a definition. Something along these lines. Well, a neighbor is someone who, and then give a list of criteria. For those included in the definition of a neighbor, these are the qualifications. These things, they're neighbor. But here's the problem with the definition. If we know who to include, well, logic tells us there are a couple of loopholes and we can therefore exclude people who don't fit that criteria. So Jesus didn't answer the question. Jesus told a story instead. And Jesus, having told the story, has another question. Which of these three do you think was neighbor to the man who was beaten up? And the professor has the answer. As I said, anyone can understand the story. The one who had mercy on him. And Jesus simply says, go and do likewise. Go and do likewise. Who is my neighbor? Who is my neighbor? You see, that question, the assumption which that question makes is that being a neighbor depends on the other person. The assumption that question makes is that being a neighbor depends on that person meeting certain criteria. You know, if that person is X, Y, and Z, then they qualify as my neighbor. The onus is off me. The responsibility is off me. Are you a neighbor or not? Well, do you meet this criteria? No, you don't. And you can see where that leads, don't you? To polarization. These are in, these are out. And the story of Jesus and Jesus' question challenges all that. No, it's not about that person qualifying to be my neighbor. We don't get to define neighbor. Do you get that? We don't get to define neighbor. We choose to be neighbor or not. Not about them. It's about me. Neighbor is about me. And that has huge implications for the way we live. It has huge implications for the way we see other people. It has huge implications for the way we interact with other people. The onus is on me. Neighbor is about me. The conversation opened when Jesus asked the question, what must I do? Was asked the question, what must I do to inherit eternal life? And the professor was able to answer the question himself. Love God, love your neighbor as yourself. Now, love in that context is not a noun. Love as a noun, that's what you find in Hallmark cards. Gallons of ink have been spilt and forests of trees have been cut down for the paper for people to write and pontificate about love as a noun. Love is not used as a noun here. Love is used as a verb. And love as a verb is not something we can pontificate about. Love as a verb is something we get up and do or don't. See the difference? Love as a verb, we either do it or we don't. And love as a verb becomes a subject of Jesus' words, go, do, go, do. That is what love looks like. Go and be neighbor. Don't sit and pontificate about the criteria. Do they fit the criteria or not? No. Go and do. Now, neighbor obviously does include the one living next door to us. But neighbor could include the checkout clerk at Pick and Pay who needs a smile or a word of encouragement because so many grumpy people have moaned at her today. Neighbor could include a car guard whose name we learn. Neighbor could include a colleague at work whose sad demeanor we notice and we ask how they are. And having asked how they are, we actually give them our attention and listen to how they are. Who is our neighbor? Our neighbor is anyone we choose to be neighbor. We may not be neighbors as such because we don't live in the same street. And so the question is not, and who is my neighbor? The question is, to whom will I choose to be neighbor? My Canadian friend's concern was with the polarization of people groups. But polarization is what happens when we define who is my neighbor. And then we end up with, well, these are in and these are out. Jesus' question is far more challenging. Which of these three do you think was neighbor? And the expert of the law replied, the one who had mercy on him. And Jesus said, go, do. Think for a moment. Who right now needs you to be neighbor? Listen to what Jesus says, and then go, do. Let's spend a few moments quietly, shall we?